What gospel is important? Part two. This sermon is given with the hope that the listener will take the time to investigate the conclusions that are made. We know that we live in a world that is full of deceitment. Maybe try and pray for wisdom to discern the truth. Let's all stand. I'll read Revelation chapter 12, 7 through 9. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. And the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. You may be seated. There was war in heaven. I don't know about you, but when I was young, I thought that heaven was a place of eternal peaceful bliss. I was shocked when I read that there was war in this peaceful abode because I thought that was impossible. Who fought who? The angels. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. Michael won, and his opponents, led by the old serpent or the devil or Satan, were driven out of heaven and cast down onto the earth. And what did the dragon and his defeated fallen angels do when they got on the earth? The Bible informs us when it says that their leader, the dragon, deceiveth the whole world. I'm going to have a lot of conclusions here, and I've got a couple more sermons that's going to give you more conclusions. I hope you all don't leave me because of what I'm going to be teaching. If you disagree, let's have discussions with it. Christian identity is now split into a lot of different subsets. There are some churches in Christian identity that deny the deity of Jesus Christ. Some deny the Trinity. Some believe in a worldwide flood of Noah with only 8 survivors. Some believe in a flat earth. Some believe that there are no angels, giants, demons, or Satan. Some believe that Christians are required to sacrifice a lamb each Passover. Some believe the Sabbath is on Saturday, some on Sunday. Some celebrate the Catholic holiday of the Mass of Christ or Christmas. Some believe that Adam was the father of Cain. Others believe it was the serpent. Some believe that the Apostle Paul was a heretic. Some eat the food that God said not to eat. Many take out usury bank and credit card loans. Many disagree on whether the United States was or is a Christian nation. Some believe that Jesus has already come back. Some teach that the Jews are descended from Judah, when it was only his third half-Canaanite son, Shelah, who eventually became Jews. A few are violent agitators against the government. Some ignore as best as they can all the other races. Some teach the Calvinistic or Arminian gospel. And many believe that all races can be saved. Some believe that the sons of God were the sons of Seth, etc. Should some of these preachers be called accursed? Galatians 1:8. The Jews have been successful in nullifying the influence of the Christian identity movement so that it has as small an influence as possible. Therefore, I am in favor of not being called a Christian identity believer anymore, as there are so many different beliefs within Christian identity, but you can just call me an Israelite Christian believer. And in Christendom, there are many more denominations and are religions now than there have ever been. Some say it's over 1,000. It's almost unanimous that each church preaches one of the two major gospels, Calvinism or Arminianism, which are both wrong. How did it get this way? In my opinion, one must understand history to learn what has taken place. The devil, in my opinion, is no longer in the bottomless pit. What strategy would the devil use to deceive the entire world? Read another scripture. The dragon let loose after 1,000 years is Revelation 20, verses 1 through 3. And I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed a little season. It is my opinion that this prophecy is being fulfilled today. The story of when the old serpent was released began a little before 1517. But in order to understand how it affected America, we need to understand more about the history of the state affairs and the royalties of Scotland and England in the 16th and 17th centuries. So this will mainly be a history lesson. I will elaborate more on them later in the sermon. I'll give you some tidbits you can look for. One young infant became the Queen of Scotland when she was only 6 days old, and later became the Queen of France. One baby boy became the King of Scotland when he was 1 year old. One child became the King of England when he was an old man, 9 years old. One teenager was made the Queen of England when she had no desire to be royalty. One Queen of England was also the Queen of Spain. Several royalties were executed by having their heads chopped off. One Queen of Scotland was ordered to abdicate her throne. One King of England married his older brother's widow. One King of England was charged with vacating his throne and was replaced. One Queen of Scotland's marriage was torn apart by a jury that found both her and her husband guilty and exiled her husband to Europe to never see his wife again, while the Queen was put in prison on a very small island. One sister of two kings of England was married when she was 9 years old and became the mother of another king of England. Would anybody like to be a king or queen of England or Scotland? Several of the kings or queens endured imprisonment, attempted assassinations, arranged marriages to foreign kings and queens, went on trial for murder and treason, and some were Catholic and some were Protestant, and it was brother killing brother. A brief history of the 16th and 17th centuries. As I said previously, in my opinion, the millennium, 1,000 years, has already happened in history. It was in the Middle Ages from around 500 A.D., the ending of the Catholic Church's empire, the Roman Empire, and then the Catholic Church started, to around 1500 A.D. During this time, England kicked the Jews out of their nation in 1290 A.D. for about 370 years. The United States will celebrate only its 250th year anniversary next year as a point of reference. About 50 years before this, in 1242, France put on trial in their own courts the Jewish Talmud, with the chief rabbis defending their filthy holy book. The Jews' book was found guilty on all charges. The trial found that the Talmud contained certain blasphemies against Jesus Christ, his family, including his mother, the Christian religion, attacks on Christians themselves, and obscene folklore. As a result, the Frenchmen rounded up all the Talmuds, which were handwritten, as this was before the printing press was invented. They rounded up all the Talmuds in the entire nation. It took 1 year to round them all up, and then they burned them in a great fire. Several decades later, in 1306, the French kicked all the Jews out of their nation. In the 1650s, this changed from expulsions only to some readmittance when one of the Jewish rabbis, Manasseh ben Israel, convinced Oliver Cromwell, who was a Calvinist. He had taken over the government of England from the beheaded king, Charles I, in 1649. Now, 1649, the pilgrims were here in 1620. The monarchy had ended, and the Republic of Great Britain had started. The rabbi informed Cromwell that Jesus could not return to the earth until the Jews were in all the nations of the world. Rabbi Ben Israel based it on one verse, Deuteronomy 28:64, which says, "And the Lord shall scatter thee." The rabbi explained that "thee" and "thou" meant the Jews. "Among all people, from the one end of the earth unto the other, and that thou," the Jews, "shall serve other gods, which neither thou, the Jews, nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone." If the Jews were not allowed to settle in all corners of the world, in particular in England, Rabbi Ben Israel asserted, the coming of the Messiah would be delayed. It was the perfect timing for such a doctrine, since according to old Christian belief, which was a heresy, in 1666, 10 years later, the doomsday was due. Rabbi Ben Israel knew how to take advantage of the opportunity offered by history to change history. Since the Jews were not in England at this time, the child prodigy rabbi convinced Oliver that his scattered Jewish people needed to be permitted back in the British Isles so Jesus could return shortly. This view convinced Oliver, and the Jews were led back into England. The Jews made their usury loans to the British people and government, and they soon took control of both the banking system, the currency, and the stock market in England from that time forth. Too bad Oliver did not know that Deuteronomy 28 is about the blessings and curses that Israel, not the Jews, would receive based on where they kept God's laws. A little over 100 years later, in the New World, after a few decades of moral stability under the state constitutions and the Articles of Confederation, the new nation's leaders produced a constitution that reflected little, if any, discernible Christian influence. All the Christian denominational references in the state constitutions were gone by 1833. America, when it became a nation, was made up of almost all white people who were 98% Protestants. It is now different. America is the melting pot of the world. When America won the Revolutionary War, the Articles of Confederation, a perpetual union of the states, left it up to each state, and they set the usury cap at 6%. 8 years later, when the nation supposedly adopted the new constitution, the state and nation adopted usury laws setting the interest cap at 8%. They did not impose the biblical teaching that Israelites were not to be under usury of any kind. I think that was a big, big mistake. Right after the British colonies became a new nation, the French Revolution started. I believe that the period when the souls were beheaded who did not worship the beast was during this major revolution. The reference is Revelation 20, verse 4. The guillotine was used for most of the executions. It's a well-known fact that the French Revolution was financed by Jews and Masonry and was the beginning of communism. With the Jews in control of the British usury banking system, they began their acclimation of money to give them the power to rule the world. I think Satan was let loose. Background of church history in England. To refresh our memories, between 1532 and 1540, King Henry VIII took control of the English church from Rome. The start of many decades of religious tensions in England and Scotland, in fact, all throughout Europe. The king made a treaty with Scotland to say that his young son, Edward VII, would be betrothed to young Mary Stuart, Queen of Scotland, to be married when they got of age. They both were about 4 or 5 years old. They betrothed them to get married when you get old enough. England wanted to unite the crowns of England and Scotland. When the Scottish Parliament rejected the marriage treaty, Henry VIII retaliated with force. The war was known as the Rough Wooing. It lasted from 1543 to 1551. The English efforts failed to achieve their goal. The conflict ended in 1551, but the violence continued until the crowns were finally united in 1603. So Henry VIII wanted his son to be married to the young girl, the Queen of Scotland. For the young queen's own safety, now they're fighting a war with Scotland. She's in danger. So they betrothed her to the future king of France. When I studied this, it just blew my mind. This is nothing. Wait till you get the rest of this. So when she was 5 years old, she went to France to live and received a very good upbringing. She lived in France for 13 happy years until she married Francis II when she was 15 years old. They both were the king and queen of Scotland and France and were very happy. 2 years later, she was a widow. Her days of happiness were over. She was more of a French woman than a Scottish when she returned to Scotland. A lot had happened in Scotland in the 19 years that she had been in France. The nation was in religious turmoil. The Catholic nation was in the middle of the Scottish Protestant Reformation. The Reformation started in 1517. They were Catholic nations. What happens? They become Protestant. They say, what, the Pope is the Antichrist? We hate the Mass? Hey. Many of the new converts to Protestantism considered their queen as a foreigner. She'd been gone for 19 years. With a religion that most of Scotland now hated. They hated Catholicism. But the royalty of Scotland was still Catholic, while the populace was becoming more anti-Catholic or Protestant. You remember when they came here? They didn't let the Catholics come in. We don't want any Catholics here. We don't want any Jews here. I got an idea why that was true. This was mainly because of the preaching of George Wishart and John Knox. More of what happened in Scotland in the battle between the two contrasting Christian religions later in the sermon. But back to Queen Mary Stuart, who was only 18 years old when she returned to Scotland. Shortly after she became a widow, she returned to her native nation of Scotland, where she had been queen since she was the age of only 6 days old. Been the queen when she was 6 days old. Queen Mary soon married a close friend, Henry Stuart, or Lord Danley. They had a son together, the future King of Scotland, King James VI. You have a King James Bible? He's the one. But Mary Stuart suffered a traumatic event when she was still pregnant. She witnessed the murder of her close personal secretary, Mr. Rizzio, by her jealous husband and his rebellious friends. The murderous men crept into her house and stabbed Rizzio to death as Mary watched. All Mary could do was scream, but there was no one nearby who could help. But the story doesn't end here. After this tragic event happened, her husband, the King of Scotland, lived in another city and became distant from her. The Queen knew that her husband was guilty of murder, but didn't say anything to the authorities. Her marriage was unofficially over. But the King was killed when his home exploded. Who did it? James Hepburn was a prime candidate. He was a pursuer of Queen Mary and was a soldier and ambitious leader. He told the Queen that he would protect and love her. James was accused of murder, was put on trial, but was found innocent. But the story continues in a very strange way. 12 days after he was found innocent, he divorced his wife, and then a couple weeks later, kidnapped and allegedly raped the Queen. It was unclear whether this was mutually planned, for they became married shortly after the strange episode had happened. What were the people of Scotland to make of all this? What would you make of it? Even her own supporters were disgusted with the Queen's behavior. A military force was raised that fought against the Queen's army, and the rebel forces defeated her smaller army very quickly. They put them both, King and Queen, in a new trial. This time, they were both found guilty. Her husband was exiled to Europe, where he never saw his wife again. The Queen was made to abdicate the throne and grant it to her one-year-old son, James VI of Scotland. He became the king when he was 1 year old. I didn't know that. And I've had his Bible for years. She was also put in prison that was located on a very small island. Real small island. They had the prison there. The former Queen of France and the former Queen of Scotland was in prison, with her husband exiled, her crowns taken away, and she was alone in a prison. Her one-year-old son was now King of Scotland, while his mother was locked in prison and his father was in exile. the king would never see either of his biological parents for as long as he lived. Then what happened to the former queen of two nations, France and Scotland? Did she stay imprisoned for the rest of her life? She was only 24 years old when she was forced to abdicate the throne of Scotland. No, she didn't stay in prison, but she only had a couple weeks of freedom. She eventually escaped with the help of her Catholic supporters by disguising herself as a servant girl and being taken by a rowboat across the waters to the mainland. Once free, what did she do? She rounds up an army to fight, and if they won, she would once again be the Queen of Scotland. But the battle lasted less than 1 hour, and she had to flee to England for safety. Her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I, was on the throne. But Elizabeth I was a Protestant, while Mary, Queen of Scots, was Catholic. Queen Elizabeth never met her cousin for the 20 years she was in England. Queen Elizabeth I put the former queen in house arrest, where she became a prisoner. But Mary had a comfortable arrangement. She wrote letters, lived in basic comfort, ate good food, but she still was a prisoner. There were attempts made, mostly by the Catholics, to have Mary on the throne of England, because many believed she was more in line to be queen than the reigning Queen Elizabeth I. This would have been her third country in which she would have been queen. She was Queen of Scotland from the time she was 6 days old, the Queen of France till her husband died, and now she'd be Queen of England. But Mary was never the Queen of England. There were four major assassination plots that were planned by the Catholics to put Mary on the throne. But Mary was never found to be involved in the fourth one, except for the fourth one. After almost 20 years in prison, Mary was tried and found guilty and was executed on February the 1st, 1587, for treason. She got her head chopped off. Now the Tudor line. We have gotten ahead of ourselves in the story. Henry VIII died in 1547. Henry VIII had made a line of succession. It would go to Henry VIII's son, Henry VI. And if he did not have any children, it would then go to his oldest daughter, Mary I. And if she were childless, then it would go to his youngest daughter, Elizabeth I. But his son, Edward VI, died when he was just 15 years old. He had been the King of England for just 6 years. While he was on his deathbed, he changed his father's rule of succession. Edward VI was a devout Protestant, while his half-sister, Mary I, was a devout Catholic. So he declared, right before he died, that the next Queen of England would be his cousin, Lady Jane Grey, who was Protestant. He was afraid to give it to his half-sister because she would try to revert the nation back to being Catholic. Who was Lady Jane Grey? She was the granddaughter of Mary Tudor, who was the daughter of Henry VII and sister of Henry VIII. Did you notice? There's a lot of Marys in the royalty line in these two centuries and these two nations. Let's go over them. Some of them have the same first and last names. It makes it very confusing when you study. It's like in the Bible, the kings had the same name on different sides. It drives you crazy. The first one, 1496 to 1533, Mary Tudor, daughter of Henry VII, was the grandmother of Lady Jane Grey, was Catholic, whose daughter and granddaughter were Protestant. Mary was the Queen of France for 2 years until her husband died. Her granddaughter was childless. The second Mary, 1516 to 1588, is Mary Tudor, daughter of Henry VIII, was Catholic, Queen of England for 5 years, and was also childless. 1542 to 1587, Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, daughter of James V of Scotland, mother of James I of England, was Catholic. She was Queen of Scotland and France. The fourth, 1631 to 1660, Mary Stuart, daughter of Charles I, mother of William III of Orange, was Protestant. And the fifth, 1689 to 1694, Mary Stuart, daughter of James IV, was Protestant and joint monarch of England and was also childless. Mary Jane's grandmother, Mary Tudor, who was the Queen of France, lived an interesting life. She was an exceptionally beautiful woman. She was part of an arranged marriage with the King of France, Louis XII, who was 34 years older than she was. She was just 18. He died 3 months after the marriage. Mary Tudor then decided the man that she loved, Charles, Duke of Suffolk. The king, Henry VIII, her brother, was against it. But she secretly married him anyway. They could have been executed, but have decided to give them a huge fine instead. She died when she was 37 years old. Lady Jane, her granddaughter, this is quite a story. Lady Jane, her granddaughter, was very well educated. She spoke 8 different languages. I can't even speak one right. She spoke 8. She's only 16 years old. Spoke 8 different languages. She had no desire to be queen. But 2 months before she became Queen of England, she was forced to marry John Dudley's son, Guilford. Now, John Dudley had been the head regent while Edward VI was on the throne. Edward took the throne when he was 9 years old. He's not going to run the nation. He had enough tell us know what's going on. He died when he's 15, so they had people who ran the government. John Dudley was running the government. And he wants his Lady Jane to marry his son. So after they got married, her husband asked Lady Jane to let him be king, which she refused. She offered to make him a duke instead. This was considered an insult to her husband's family. Guilford's family retaliated by saying that their son would withhold his conjugal duties, thereby denying her an heir. These people do not mess around. Mary Tudor I, this is the daughter of Henry VIII now, would not let the crown of England be given to anyone else besides her. She wanted that crown, and she believed that she was next in line to inherit it. That's what her father said. She was a devout Catholic who wanted to restore the head of the Church of England back to the Pope. She marched into London with a small army and demanded that she be queen. Lady Jane's supporters quickly fled, and Queen Lady Jane was disposed off the throne and put into prison. So, Mary Tudor now is Queen of England. Now, America's over here getting people, more and more people. A couple months later, there was a rebellion led by Thomas Wyatt over the announcement a queen marries the first future husband. Who's she going to marry? He was Catholic and the king of Spain. Spain was the most powerful nation in Europe at this time. And Mary's mother, Henry VIII, married a lady from Spain. So, anyway, Lady Jane's father, Henry Grey, joined in the rebellion against Mary from being queen. Queen Mary's mother was from Spain, Catherine of Aragon, and Catholic. The fact that Lady Jane's father participated in the plot to assassinate Queen Mary I, plus the fact that Lady Jane was a staunch Protestant, made Queen Mary I, a Catholic, determined to execute her. Lady Jane was executed along with her husband when she was just 17 years old. She got her head chopped off. What? Queen Mary Stuart executed about 300 Protestants in her five-year reign and became known as Bloody Mary. In addition, Queen Mary I married Philip II of Spain. Philip II was the son of Charles V of Spain of the Holy Roman Empire and was a very devout Catholic. The union between Mary I and Philip II, which lasted for 3.5 years, was unpopular in England, leading to tensions and conflicts. Queen Mary I died in 1558, and Philip II returned to Spain. Philip II's reign in Spain lasted from 1556 to 1598, during which he sought to expand Spanish power. They both were childless. But there's more to the story. Well, this was too much for King Philip II of Spain. Spain was the most powerful nation in Europe, and he wanted England to be a Catholic nation once more. After his marriage with Queen Mary Tudor I failed, 30 years later, after the execution of the other Mary, who was also Catholic, Queen of Scots, that was the final straw. King Philip II decided to invade England and make them Catholic once again. That's why the Spanish Armada happened. He sent the mighty Spanish Armada, 130 ships, with over 30,000 soldiers from Spain to England. It looked unbelievably bad for England. But through a series of incidents, including a God-sent terrific storm, the Armada limped home with over half their boats sunk. Spain would never again be the most powerful nation in Europe. Now, Randa, turn to the picture, and I'll read the review. Here's Henry VII, and he had 4 children who lived. He had about 7, but the children died young or childbirth. He had Arthur, Henry, Mary, and Margaret. So he had 4 children who left. She married the King of France, became the Queen of France. She married the King of Scotland. And she's from Spain. Now, Henry VIII, after being refused an annulment from his marriage by the Pope with Catherine of Aragon, he decided that he would be the head of the Church of England. The Pope was the head of the church. He said, "The heck with you. I'll be the head of the church, and I'll give myself an annulment." Catherine, who was from Spain, had been married to Henry VIII's brother, Arthur Tudor, first, but he died shortly after they were married. So Catherine married him. He died. Then Henry marries her. And they're not having any children. So he's happy. I want a male heir. Pope, give me an annulment. He says no. He says, I can't marry anybody. So he gets himself as the king of the church, and or as the head of the church, and he gives himself an annulment. And so that's gone. Then he marries, wait a minute. He married the queen. He had one daughter with her. That's Mary the First, the Queen of Scotland. So he didn't have no son. So he married Anne Boleyn. And he has one daughter, Elizabeth the First. He charged her with adultery and chopped her head off. Then he married Jane Seymour, and he got one son. After the birth of the son, she dies. Then, it's the girl from Germany. He said, they didn't have photographs back then. They had portraits. When she came to marry him, you're not as beautiful as the portraits are. He became disgusted with her. So he annulled that marriage. Catherine Howard came.
He was a lovely man.
Yeah, yeah. And she had another affair, so he chopped her head off. And then this last one outlived him. Died of natural causes. He had six wives. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Catherine Aragon and Henry VIII had six children between 1510 and 1518, but only one, Mary I, survived past infancy. The other five were either stillborn or died in early childhood. The annulment with Catherine for the first time made England a Protestant nation. The Pope is kicked out of the church. King Henry VIII wanted to have a son to be an heir. He had six wives who were either annulled, beheaded, died by natural causes, or survived. His son, Edward VI, now there's Edward VI, a Protestant, ruled from the age 9 to 15. He, on his deathbed, decided that Lady Jane Grey would be next in line to the Queen of England. That goes down to here. She was the Queen of France. He died. He buried Henry Grey. Then this is Lady Jane down here. She'd be the Queen. So she became the Queen. Mary had a fit, raised an army, kicked her out, threw her in prison, chopped her head off. She became the Queen. That's Bloody Mary. Queen Lady Jane ruled for 9 days until Mary I, half-sister to the former King of England, drove her off the throne and executed her, became queen. Bloody Mary, as she was known, was a staunch Catholic. Married Philip II of Spain, a Catholic, but remained childless. She was followed by Elizabeth. So the three children of Henry VIII were all kings or queens. Elizabeth died childless. So who's going to be the next king of England or queen? Good question. You follow the line. He's born first, second, third, and fourth. She's born before him, so it goes here. And that goes down to James VI of Scotland. James I of England becomes the king, and he finally unites the kingdoms of England and Scotland. Are you confused? This ended the Tudor dynasty of the British rule. Now, Randa, go after the pictures. Queen Elizabeth, unmarried and childless, steadfastly refused to name an heir. The English Secretary of State, Robert Cecil, negotiated secretly with Mary, Queen of Scots' son, and successor, King James VI of Scotland. His wife, Anne of the nation of Denmark, and the king had three children, two sons and a daughter. During King James I of England's reign, 1603 to 1625, the European wars of religion were intensifying. Protestants and Catholics were engaged in violent persecution of each other across Europe following the Protestant Reformation. There were all kinds of assassination and murderous plots between the two so-called Christian religions. I just remind you, brother killing brother. The kings and queens of the house of Tudor and the house of Stuart included spouses. This is people they married. People from Spain, France, Scotland, Denmark, Portugal, Holland, Italy, Germany, besides England. But there's other troubles that England suffered. I'll mention a few of these. This was just part of the troubles in 17th century England. During Protestant James I's reign, Catholics were disappointed in his non-tolerance of their religion. They tried to blow up Parliament. In 1605, which was known as the Gunpowder Plot, or the Jesuit, that's the Catholic Jews, treason. The explosion, which was discovered shortly before it would have happened, would have assassinated James I, his wife Anne, who was from Denmark, and the heir at that time, Henry Frederick. He died of typhoid fever in 1612 and was never king. Well, after King James I died, the next king was his son Charles I. The conflict between the monarchy and Parliament, which led to the English Civil War, 1642 to 1651, and the execution of King Charles I in 1649. We had a war between the states. They had civil war in their nation before we did. This beheading of the king caused the termination of the monarchy. In its place, the establishment of the new government of the English Commonwealth was headed by Oliver Cromwell. This was fueled by deep divisions over religion, with fear of Catholicism and a struggle between the Church of England and the Puritans. Besides these major problems was a devastating epidemic. Oh, we had one too, didn't we? Bubonic plague that struck London and other parts of England in 1665, killing a sizable portion of the population. They figure about 15% died. Then there was the Great Fire of London in 1666, a four-day fire that destroyed most of the city. They were all cramped up. They're all made of wood. They had a bakery shop caught on fire, and the whole thing burnt down in 4 days. Then there were rising bread prices. We had rising egg prices, didn't we? That made it harder for many families to survive, as well as the enclosure movement made it difficult for the poor to access land for grazing. Religious and political conflicts drove some of the Protestants to leave England for North America, where they established settlements like James, King Jamestown, and Massachusetts, that's the Pilgrims. Later, the Puritans. In my opinion, these were God's judgments against his people for not following his commandments. After the brief stint with England during the Commonwealth that lasted 11 years, the monarchy restored to Charles II, son of Charles I. He had been residing in exile in France, the Dutch Republic, and the Spanish Netherlands. But politics in England remained chaotic. There was the Rye House plot to murder both Charles II and his brother James II in 1683. Things got so bad that Charles II dissolved the English Parliament in 1681 and ruled alone until his death in 1685. But like the president saying, I'm ignoring Congress, you're done. After Charles II's death, his brother James II took the throne. James II was the last Catholic monarch of England, Scotland, and Ireland, and his reign is remembered primarily for conflicts over religion. James II wanted to promote Catholicism in Britain, even though it was more of a Protestant nation. This made many Protestants in the nation very angry. In the first year of his reign, King James II faced a rebellion by the Duke of Monmouth, an illegitimate son of Charles II, which was quickly defeated. The Duke was executed, his head was chopped off, at the Tower of London, and the rebel recruits were found guilty of treason and sentenced to death or servitude in the West Indies. King James II also put down a rebellion led by Archibald Campbell of Scotland. King James II then turned his attention to religious policies, issuing a Declaration of Indulgence in 1687, which granted religious freedom to Catholics and non-Anglican Protestants. The King's Declaration of Indulgence was met with opposition from many in England, including the Anglican Church and Parliament. They saw it as an attempt by the King to undermine the Church of England and establish Catholicism as the dominant religion in England. James also had placed many Catholics to positions in the government. To make matters worse, it was assumed that James's second wife, Maria Molinia of Italy, she was Catholic, would never produce an heir. The nation was prepared to wait until the king died, when he would be seated by his Protestant daughter, another one of those five Marys. But then the king and queen had a son born on June the 10th, 1688, and was baptized into the Catholic faith. It was suspected by some that a live infant child had been substituted for a stillborn one, or that the queen even faked her pregnancy. Nevertheless, within a few weeks, some of the king's most determined political opponents finally decided enough was enough. They were tired of the fighting between a Catholic royalty or a Protestant royalty that had been going on since 1534. It had been a century and a half. And they decided that Parliament would be the main ruler. And they would appoint a king or queen who would no longer be Catholic. The monarchy would be a figurehead. They formally invited William of Orange from Holland, who was married to the former king's Protestant daughter, Mary, who was 15 years old, to invade Britain and take the throne. Isn't that something? You invade our country and take over the throne. Accompanied by a large army, William III landed at Brixham on the Devon coast in November 1688. Realizing that nearly all his supporters had joined his son-in-law, the king fled for France, thus bringing the Glorious Revolution to an end. James II was captured and brought back to London, but William III let him escape so he would not become a martyr to the Catholic cause. Here's where he landed. Brixham, right there. There's Plymouth. For a few weeks, there was no sovereign of England. They had no king, they had no queen. In January 1689, it was agreed that the married couple should be joint sovereign. So for the first time and only time in English history, the man and the wife were both sovereigns. It was declared with William remaining as the sole monarch should his wife die first. It was declared that James II had left the throne vacant by fleeing abroad and abdicating the realm's government. Now what do you think happens? He leaves. They say he left it vacant. William and Mary are now the king and queen. What do you think he's going to do? In 1689, Parliament issued the Bill of Rights that no Roman Catholic shall ever take the throne of England. Although in 1690, James II returned to Ireland with an army to regain his throne. He was defeated at the Battle of Boigny and spent the rest of his life in France, where he died in 1701. The crowning of William and Mary marked a significant shift towards a constitutional monarchy, where Parliament's authority over the monarch was established and the monarch's power was limited. Parliament gained control over taxation, the army and navy, legislation, and laying the foundation for the modern British parliamentary system. But the wars aren't over. In 1696, the Jacobites, a faction loyal to the deposed King James II, plotted to assassinate William III and restore the former Catholic king to the throne. But it failed. The revolutionary created the principle of a contract between monarch and people, which if violated meant the monarch could be removed. A key tenet of Jacobism was that the kings were appointed by God, making the post-1688 regime illegitimate. Well, Queen Mary died first, followed by King William III a few years later. But they were childless. They were succeeded on the English throne by Anne, who was a Protestant and was a sister to Queen Mary. But King James II's son and grandson, James Edward Stuart, who is known as the Old Pretender, and Charles Edward Stuart, the Young Pretender, after they grew up, attempted to supplant King George I and King George II off the throne with the aid of the French. They both failed in their military attempts. The Old Pretender retired in France, while the Young Pretender died a drunk in Rome the year before George Washington became President of the United States. Queen Anne died childless. This ended the Stuart dream of sitting once more upon the British throne. Don't you think this is understandable why most of the founding fathers did not want a monarchy in the United States? The next king would come from the Hanovers of Germany. The first Hanover king couldn't speak English and was very settled in England, while the second king didn't do much better. And King George III was the king when the Revolutionary War took place. Now, the House of Stuart, our brief review. James I, James VI of Scotland, had Henry, Charles, and Elizabeth. He died. Charles I became the king. He had Charles II, Mary, James II. He had his head chopped off. 11 years later, Charles I, II comes back on the throne. James II takes over the throne. He vacates. They had Mary's son, William, Mary, James's daughter, Mary. They became joint kings. And then Anne became the king. And when she died childless, went over here to George I. I'll finish up with the Glorious Revolution and the ministry of John Knoxon. I'll start to put it together. You'll see what happened. And then I'm going to get into what happened in the United States. John Knox received a very high education, a master's degree. And after he graduated, he was eventually met itinerant preacher George Wishart, who was a reformer. But Scotland had not embraced this new form of Christianity and remained strongly Catholic. John Knox provided security for George Wishart as he traveled around Scotland. But Catholic Cardinal Beaton captured Wishart and charged him with heresy and had him burnt at the stake. Many in Scotland were outraged because they knew that Wishart had done nothing worthy of being burnt to death, and Cardinal Beaton was guilty of having many open cases of affairs. A couple months later, five men snuck into the house of Beaton and killed him. They then, with their families, took refuge together and asked John Knox to be their preacher. In his first sermon, he preached from the book of Daniel, chapter 7, that the Pope was the Antichrist. His teachings combined his theological learning, Wishart's Reformation teachings, and a distrust of the Catholic leadership. He preached the rejection of the Pope, rejection of the Mass, rejection of purgatory, and stressed the importance of the Bible over church tradition. Of course, now, the Bible is in the language. The people are reading the Bible. Before, they didn't read it. They couldn't read it. There's no Bible to read. But soon, the mother of the Queen of Scotland, Mary Guise, had ordered John Knox to be arrested, because she was Catholic, and put on a galley ship. Her daughter, the young Queen of Scotland, was in France, awaiting the day when she would marry the King of France when they were both older. John Knox was a galley slave on a French boat for 19 months and became very ill. He's rowing this boat. What happened? Knox was rescued by the teenage English king, Edward VI, son of Henry VIII, who was once offered to be betrothed to the 5-year-old Catholic Queen of Scotland and soon to be Queen of France, but Scotland refused, remember? The young King of England rescued Knox because he thought that he'd be the one to make England Protestant better than anyone else. Knox became the preacher of the English court as they tried to solidify the Reformation in England. But King Edward VI died after 2 years after he rescued Knox in 1553. And then after a 9-day rule by his cousin, the crown was taken over by his half-sister Mary Tudor, a Roman Catholic. She was called Bloody Mary for her execution of close to 300 Protestants. It was her desire to drive out all the Reformation achievements that had occurred in England. John next fled to Geneva, Switzerland, where he met John Calvin. They spent a lot of time together. But was Calvin Jewish? I got a quote from Eustace Mullins. You know who Eustace Mullins was. He was in that Library of Congress. He stayed there for days and weeks. Quote, "We," referring to the Jews, "are the fathers of all revolutions." All revolutions. "Even of those which sometimes happens to turn against the Jews. The Jews are the supreme masters of peace and war. The Jews can boast of being the creators of the Reformation. Calvin was one of our Jews' children. He was of Jewish descent and was entrusted by Jewish authority and encouraged with Jewish finance to draft his scheme in the Reformation, which was to convince Christians it was all right to charge usury and other damnable heresies which are in violation of God's laws," unquote. Geneva had been transformed into a Reformation city, and John Knox was interested in repeating this in the nation of Scotland. Knox returned for 2 years and preached in Scotland, but returned to Geneva after the political realm became too dangerous to stay. Then he wrote his famous booklet, "The First Blast of the Trumpet Against the Monstrous Regime of Women." This told that Knox thought that women were not created by God to be leaders of nations. That was against the mother of the Queen of Scotland, Mary Guise, her daughter, Queen Mary of Scots, and Queen Mary I of England. But Knox received his best support from one of the other queens. This time it was after Queen Mary died and the Protestant Queen Elizabeth I of England supported Knox's role. Knox gained the support of the lower class of the people, while the mother of the Queen of Scotland, Mary Guise, gained the support of the nobles. But Guise died in 1580. And Knox wrote the Confession of Faith of the Kirk, that's the Church of Scotland. But Queen Guy's daughter, Mary Queen of Scots, returned from France and took the Catholic Eucharist with the nobles. This set the stage for the battle. Catholic or Protestant, Queen Mary or John Knox, they battled for 6 years, with both trying to convert Scotland. One to get the people to join the Protestant Reformation, the other to remain Catholic. But with Mary's problems with her marriage and the murder charges against her and her most recent husband, she eventually fled to England, where she was imprisoned by Protestant Elizabeth I. John Knox was married twice and had children from both marriages. He married first when he was in his 20s, the dates are not sure, and he married a 17-year-old when he was 51 years old. He died 6 years later when he was 57 years old and had 3 daughters with her. King James I was only 1 year old when he took the throne of Scotland. Knox had the opportunity to teach him to believe the Protestant Reformation, and he led him to help make Scotland a Protestant nation, the Presbyterian Church. Yikes! What history took place in these 2 centuries right before the formation of the United States of America? The old dragon began his attack on the monasteries, on the monarchies, and disrupted the nations of Europe into many wars, with the Enlightenment changing the gospel of the Protestants. And I got another picture. Henry VIII. Next. Edward VI. Next. Lady Jane Grey. Next. Bloody Mary. Next. Elizabeth I. We go to another family. After James I, Charles I. He had his head chopped off. Monarchy's over. 11 years later, they bring back Charles II. James II. William and Mary, Anne, and that dynasty is over, then the Georges. There's the king when America broke off from. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.